fast enough for his taste.
No, I felt like it was slow, to be honest with you. And we had to do, I'm not being joking. We had to do a better job. We left the ball on the ground too much. We didn't get the ball to the officials. We could have sped things up.
That's scary. If your team is playing the Philadelphia Eagles this season, look out. Interesting matchup this Thursday as well. The New England Patriots hosting the New York Jets. And both those teams off to pretty good starts. So wasn't pretty, but the Jets did get a victory. They got a little help late in the game.
On this Eagles thing, don't you think their defense is going to have a lot of depth, as much time as they're going to spend on the field?
Well, yes and no, because I guess the team runs plays quickly, but they don't always score extremely quickly. But they, probably faster than usual. That's a fair point. I think you put more pressure on the other team's defense, but I guess I never thought about the impact on Philadelphia. Let's ask Michael about that. We bring in Michael Schottie on the Revolution Hotline. He's at BleacherReport.com. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Wally is not the biggest NFL fan, but he raises a great point. Doesn't the Philadelphia defense in some ways have added pressure on it because of the offense's ability to score quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's absolutely correct. There is a lot of pressure being put on the Eagles that we don't talk about. We talk about what Michael Vick has to do in the offense. We talk about, LeSean McCoy's, tremendous efforts. We don't talk about what Wally was talking about with the Eagles' defense. We also don't talk about the offensive line, the receivers who have to run, like twice as many routes as normal. They're only running a couple actual different kinds of routes, but they're doing it more than they're supposed to. And so I think that it underscores the fact that the Eagles need immediate success. And I know they won. I know they looked great and really got everybody excited. But it needs to continue, because if you're putting your own team through all this added pressure, all these added reps, all this added conditioning, you need the results. Because if you don't see the results, NFL players tend not to like going outside the box if it's not getting wins.
One of the great matchups this week and really throughout the season is going to be San Francisco and Seattle. And I saw, you may have seen this, they already have the video game commercial running between Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson. And now apparently there was a story that came out that they have an eyebrow bet. So the loser has to shave an eyebrow in this particular game. Man. Now, I don't know what happens when they play later in the season. Maybe it's the other eyebrow. I don't know what the deal is there. But it is just one more layer to an already budding rivalry. And some people have Seattle going to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, I feel like it should be a couple lines in the eyebrow, kind of like old kid in play in the
yes,
80s. That would be much more enjoyable and would give you something to move on to in the second matchup.
Yeah.
The weird thing for me is I think Seattle and 49ers fans are almost, wary of stuff like this, because with the video game commercial coming out, the eyebrow bet, these two are chummy. And fans don't like that. Seattle Seahawks fans and 49ers fans dislike each other. And that was pretty clear last season, that as these two teams got more and more physical, as these teams got more and more chippy, their fans realized that and went out of the way to dislike each other. And now all of a sudden, these quarterbacks are happy with one another. And I think it makes me think of when I go to things like the Senior Bowl or the Combine, et cetera, and the guys you see hanging out are all people from the same division. Because you hang out with each other, you're close in proximity, you see each other a couple times a year, it's just natural. But I don't think fans get that. So when this matchup goes to town, I think these two teams as a whole dislike each other as well, because it's going to get chippy. But it's almost interesting that these two quarterbacks are almost like Fox and the Hound, two unlikely friends that are kind of battling perception on the outside. But it is a great matchup because these are two deep teams. These are two talented teams. I think later in the season it'll probably be a better game because Seattle's reeling right now with some suspensions, some injuries, et cetera. And the 49ers are just too good. But these are two teams that should be seeing each other not only again, but possibly again in the NFC Championship game.
Former Arkansas running back Peyton Hillis has landed in Tampa. Tampa hosting this weekend New Orleans in another premier matchup. And sidebar story, there is a mayor of a beach city in the Tampa area that is renaming the city to Revis Island, Florida.
Yeah, isn't that supposed to be the opposite? Like, there should be no one on Revis Island. That's the whole point. And now you're going to name it for tourism issues. It's a local politician doing something that he thinks is going to, attract attention, and it's working because we're talking about it.
Right.
But when push comes to shove, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers aren't about Darrell Revis. They got to be about Josh Freeman. Josh Freeman has thrown more interceptions the past, I think it's like 4 or 5 years, than anyone in the NFL. And if he doesn't quit that, if he doesn't take better control of the ball, if that defense doesn't come together and the offense doesn't score more points, nothing's going to happen to this team, and Darrell Revis is just going to be an overpaid free agent signing bust.
So what about the game itself this week? Which team has the edge, you think, in this one?
I think it's got to be the Saints, and I don't want to directly draw the line to, you know, the Buccaneers had a rough time with the Jets, and then, of course, they're going to have a rougher time with the Saints. It's a divisional game. Anything can happen. I think the Saints' defense played out of their minds, and I don't know if they're going to do that again. I do think they're going to end up getting a bunch of sacks and probably a pick or two off of Josh Freeman, so it's going to cause that defense to step up. And I just think right now, on paper, if you're just drawing up the depth chart and you cross out the names and you don't even know, like, who these guys are playing for, you would almost think that the Buccaneers' defense is some sort of all-star unit, and you'd pick them to win this game. But when push comes to shove, you have that many moving parts. It's like a Swiss watch. You have that many moving parts. They need to be moving together at the same time, and if they don't, nothing's going to work.
You don't mean that somebody's neutral, do you, when you say Swiss watch?
No.
Okay.
There's certainly no one neutral in this game.
Okay.
Not when Rob Ryan is involved.
Green Bay gets to go back home after losing against San Francisco in a very competitive game. Washington, you could literally almost see the rust shaking off of RG3 as the game went on. He looked much better at the end, certainly, and almost led them back against a team that was, you know, certainly a great challenge in Philadelphia, and their defense didn't have any answers that night. But really interesting Week 2 matchup. Green Bay's a touchdown favorite at home. What did you make of their two performances? Because they came right out of the gate with some pretty high-profile opponents.
Yeah, I think Green Bay showed, A, that they're not going to have as hard of a time stopping mobile quarterbacks. Now, obviously, Colin Kaepernick was able to do whatever he wanted through the air, and so that makes me question whether or not their pass defense is where it needs to be the NFC champion that I have them as. But they've added athleticism on the front line. They've added some linebackers who are as good at pursuit as they are at attacking. Clay Matthews is clearly healthy. These are all issues that I think will help them against RG3. It'll keep him locked down. I don't think he's going to run around as much as Kaepernick did even behind the line of scrimmage. And I think you said it best that there's rust. And I'm going to say there's mental and physical rust. The physical rust you saw when, you know, he was running around and didn't exactly look right. He got caught. You know, RG3 does not get caught from behind very often. So the mental rust is what I consider more important. The planting, all of the just the throws intermediate and long that he wasn't hitting. I mean, this is a guy who was a great deep passer last season. So the question then is, if he's going to be rusty at all, how does that defense stop Aaron Rodgers? And does Aaron Rodgers just completely steamroll RG3? And I think that's what's going to happen, because if you have to match them point for point, as they did against Philly, I don't think they're going to be able to. And I could see a similar situation happening where the Packers get up big. By the time RG3 gets his head right in this one, it could be too little too late.
Michael Schotte, BleacherReport.com, joining us on the Revolution Hotline. Ndamukong Suh, is he just the worst human being alive? He gets an unprecedented fine with $100,000. They don't suspend him, which I'm not sure about. There is apparently an effort by the NFLPA, though, to reach out to him and say, we have a basic regard for one another that you don't seem to be understanding. He doesn't get it. I don't know why, and I cannot believe they did not throw the book at him with a suspension here.
Yeah, I think when we look at things like Ndamukong Suh, I think we have to separate the just absolutely idiotic things he does to the things that the mass media narrative comes down and says are idiotic. And I think there's a couple that you pointed out to me. The Jay Cutler one is big. Last year,
I love that play.
He got fined for punching Jay Cutler in the head.
Yeah, but he pushed him down to the ground, basically. It was just basically a forearm shiver to the ground. I liked it, actually. But I'm also a Packers fan, so I'm biased. But I thought that was a pretty good play.
So he got fined for that, and it was a penalty, et cetera. So it becomes part of the narrative, even though you and I can sit here and say, well, it shouldn't really have been a penalty. It was a good play. So when push comes to shove, Suh does a ton of stupid things on the field. But I think then we start assigning, like, moral, like, anger at him for it. I think that goes too far. I will go so far as to say he's a stupid player. He's like a big kid in a candy store, doesn't know his own strength, and doesn't realize when he does stupid things like diving in a guy's knees that could end that guy's career. And I think, you know, we saw Suh apologize to him at halftime, apologize to his teammates. You know, I don't think he's evil. I don't think this is Walter White, you know, just trying to end people's careers. But I do think he's stupid, and I think he needs to play smarter. But I don't know if he plays smarter, if he's going to play as well. This is kind of that Jim Schwartz, Detroit Lions, and Ndamukong Suh. It's just the way they operate. They play on that edge where one moment they're getting this ridiculous 15-yard penalty, but the next play is the exact same, you know, the exact same motive, and it's a great defensive play. with Ndamukong Suh, I think he's going to keep getting fines because that's the narrative behind him. The NFL League Office has bought into it. They've helped it. And I don't think it's going to stop. I think it's going to get to the point where he's suspended, and either he has to completely neutralize himself as a football player, or he has to just grow up. And I think it's going to be a long time before that happens.
Michael, how many times has he been fined now? Five? Four?
Oh, a bunch. One of my favorite moments yesterday was Chad Ochocinco, or Chad Johnson, noted that Ndamukong Suh has passed him in the fine department as of yesterday.
That's pretty good. Well, the thing is, you made a great point, too. I think his coach is kind of an idiot, too. He's done a good job, but at the same time, he does some pretty dumb things as well, and he sort of loses it. So it is the Sue thing is so frustrating because he is one of those guys that could go down, I mean, because of his physical gifts, as one of the great defensive linemen in the history of the NFL, but he's such a moron, he can't get out of his own way. It's really frustrating to watch. I hate to see guys throw their own potential away, but nevertheless.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because there's two kind of sidebars here. One, Sue's just not stupid on the field. I mean, we talk about, you know, all the driving incidents he's had off the field, the fact that this guy, you know, can't seem to, you know, recognize what a red light means or what a speed limit sign means. But he's also got an engineering degree from Nebraska. I mean, he's probably legitimately one of the smartest football players in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He just acts stupid. And the other kind of sidebar is that the guy who hands down these fines from the NFL, Merton Hanks, wasn't exactly a clean player in his day and age. Probably looked a little bit more like Ndamukong Suh than, you know, guys like Drew Brees or Dominique Foxworth, the guys who are the face of the PA today. So people can change. And so I think when talking Ndamukong Suh, that's why I hesitate to call him evil or to say that he's, you know, a bad, bad man. He's clearly out of control, and he clearly has no idea when to flip the switch and when not to get that intensity on the football field. And he needs to learn how to drive better or find himself a chauffeur. But frankly, I just think this is a kid being a kid and an idiot being an idiot. And I think when push comes to shove, as he ages, as he matures, I think a lot of this is going to work itself out. But it's probably too little too late from the NFL fine perspective.
Michael Schotte of BleacherReport.com joining us on the Revolution Hotline. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I want to see.
Michael, on this fine, won't he appeal to the Players Association?
Well, the appeals process goes to a body that is joint, both NFL and NFLPA. They've both signed off on these guys, and it's all former players and coaches, and it might work. I mean, it might get dropped to like $75,000, but it's still going to be multiple game checks. And they're basically saying that, suspension has to come next, and he's already been suspended once. I think the question here is that the block is a block. And yes, he dove at his knees, but I think the reason there wasn't a suspension was because it wasn't out of the field of play. It wasn't I don't think it was Sue and Clifton. I don't think it was that egregious, that bad. And this is something that back when Sue and Clifton had their little run-in, that wasn't even a penalty. So this is something that, yes, you have to say you have to be smarter. This is something where Sue is a many-time multiple offender, so I'm not saying the giant fine wasn't good, and I think if it's an appeal, it's not going to be reduced very much, if at all. It's going to be a multiple game penalty because you want to get it through to his head that, you know, quote unquote, crime doesn't pay.
Michael, let me ask about the Arkansas guys before we let you go. Darren McFadden scored a touchdown and a loss in his opening week. I didn't see much, if anything, from Peyton Hillis, I guess, for Tampa. And then Nile Davis had a good preseason and certainly what I would think would figure in. Didn't do much in their opening game victory. But talk to me about the Arkansas guys and what your expectations are for those guys and anybody else you can think of off the top of your head that has ties. Certainly Tyler Wilson disappointed that he's not on the opening day roster in Oakland.
Yeah, I think just to start with Tyler Wilson, this is a guy who physically, you know, I'm not going to draw a direct comparison to Ndamukong Suh, but I think you said it best with when you're talking physically, Suh should be better than he is. And Suh should have an all-time great career. And I think Wilson kind of fits in that mold where physically, he's got it all. I mean, we talk about his small hands, but other than that, this is a guy who has the talent to be an NFL quarterback. The problem is, coming out of Petrino's offense, coming out of, you know, a high-volume passing attack that didn't exactly look like an NFL scheme, he's got to get his head on right. And I don't know if he's got the work ethic to do it. I don't know if he's in an atmosphere in Oakland that's going to enable him to do that. If he's got a guy like Matt McGloin, who's a ridiculously hard worker ahead of him, I don't know what Wilson does to get ahead of McGloin. So just to move along, I don't see much of anything happening this year with either Hillis or Davis. But with McFadden, this is a guy who could end up suffering this season. We talked about there was the zone rushing attack last year, which kind of held him back, and so they've moved to a power rushing attack. But he might be held back statistically again by Terrell Pryor. The fact that Pryor isn't a typical drop-back passer who's going to drop back and throw a 17-yard strike, Pryor's going to run around a lot. And I think it behooves McFadden to sit there and learn his quarterback's tendencies to be that safety blanket, that if Pryor is going to run around and find space, McFadden has to get to green grass by Pryor, so he's the guy to catch that ball, because if he's not, he could end up running routes, sitting there blocking in the backfield and having no idea what to do as Pryor's trying to make plays.
Michael, appreciate the time. It is 10:50, so we're kind of behind and we got to run, but I would like to spend some more time. We'll talk again soon, hopefully, because there's certainly a long way to go in the season.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right, appreciate it. A lot of things to hit on. Certainly, we didn't get a chance to get into New England with all their issues at receiver. Looks like, I guess, Amendola's messed up. And we didn't talk about Welker's impact. I did want to talk to him about Denver and Baltimore also, but up against it. We'll just have to say that for next time around, Wally. Or you can fill us in on your thoughts when we come back. But more on the A&M game, and or should I call it the Alabama game? I guess since they're the champions. We will.